2020 financial results and Q&A webcast. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star one on your telephone. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. If you require any further assistance, please press star zero. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker, Mr. Martin Viecha, Senior Director of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Sherry, and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Tesla's fourth quarter 2020 Q&A webcast. I'm joined today by Elon Musk, Zachary Kirkhorn, and a number of other executives. Our Q4 results were announced at about 1:00 P.M. Pacific Time in the update deck we published at the same link as this webcast. During this call, we will discuss our business outlook and make forward-looking statements. These comments are based on our predictions and expectations as of today. Actual events or results could differ materially due to a number of risks and uncertainties, including those mentioned in our most recent filings with the SEC. During the question-and-answer portion of today's call, please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. Please press star one now if you'd like to join the question queue. Before we jump into Q&A, Elon has some opening remarks. Elon?
Thank you. Just to recap the year, 2020 was a defining year for us on many levels. Despite a challenging environment, we reached an important milestone of producing and delivering half a million cars. I'd just like to once again thank the people at Tesla for an incredible effort. We delivered almost as many cars last year as we produced in our entire history. Really an incredible growth rate, and despite a very challenging 2020. My hat is off. It's such an honor to work with such great people at Tesla. For the year, we achieved free cash flow of nearly $2.8 billion after spending more than $3 billion on building new factories and other expenditures. We reached industry-leading GAAP operating margin in addition to positive net income and record cash flow. Regarding capacity expansion, while we focused on execution, we continued to build a lot of new capacity. We started producing the Model Y out of Fremont and have almost reached full production speed. We ramped the Model 3 in Shanghai to more than 5,000 cars a week sustainably, and Shanghai continues to grow rapidly. We introduced the heat pump to all of our vehicles. We ramped the single piece. We started and were able to ramp to volume production at the single piece castings for Model Y. This is where, for the first time in history, the entire rear third skeleton of a car is being cast as a single piece in the largest and most advanced casting machine ever made. We built a Model Y factory in China from start to finish in one year. We're also building Giga Berlin and Giga Texas, which we expect to start production later this year. Lastly, we built a battery cell factory in the Bay Area. This, even though it is a pilot plant, its capacity is large enough that it would be in probably the top 10 battery cell factories on Earth, despite being a pilot plant. Regarding the new Model S and X, we're super excited to announce the new Model S and Model X Plaid are in production now and will be delivered in February. We've been able to bring forward the Plaid, Model S and X, and so Model S will be delivered in February and Model X a little later. The Model S Plaid, we're actually in production now and we'll be delivering next month. This is a tri-motor Model S with a completely new interior. There are actually a lot of great things about this. I'll do another call about the Model S later. It's really a tremendous improvement over the prior version. This Model S Plaid will be the first production car ever that is able to go 0 to 60 miles an hour in under 2 seconds. No production car ever has been able to get below 2 seconds, 0 to 60. This is a luxury sedan that is able to go 0 to 60 in less than 2 seconds, and we'll have the ability to seat up to 7 people with the third row seats. So this is pretty nuts. This is faster, to be clear, than any car. It's not like there was a different type of car, like a two-door sports car, that was able to do better faster than this. This is the fastest accelerating car ever made for that is allowed to go on roads in history. And like I said, we'll start delivering it in a matter of weeks. And like I said, I'll do something that gets into the details. The Model S changes maybe later this week or next. But it's really better in many ways. We will be actually raising the price of Model S for this new model. So people who bought the old model, the new model will be $10,000 more. So hopefully people aren't too upset if they bought the old model last month, but this one's 10K more. We think it's probably the best car of any kind at any price available in the world today. So, then with regard to full self-driving, we've made massive progress on full self-driving. If I recommend watching the videos of our public beta. So we've got, I think, almost 1,000 people in the beta at this point. And with each successive release of the beta of the FSD software, it's really improving rapidly. It's now very common for, I drive the latest builds. It's very common for me to have no interventions on drives that I do, including drives to places I've never been to. So these are not pre-planned routes. They're the car's never been there before, and it's now actually it's more common than not for the car to have no interventions, even on a complex drive. So, and this is like basically, I'm highly confident the car will be able to drive itself with reliability in excess of human this year. This is a very big deal. And thinking about, like, how does one justify the value of the company being where it is? And I think there is a way, just with back of the envelope math, to potentially justify it where, if Tesla ships, let's say, hypothetically, $50 or $60 billion worth of vehicles, and those vehicles become full self-driving and can be used in robo taxis. Their utility increases from an average of 12 hours a week to potentially an average of 60 hours a week if they're capable of serving as a robo taxi. So that's like roughly a 5x increase in utility. Even if you say like, okay, well, let's just assume that the car becomes twice as useful as not 5 times useful, but merely twice as useful. That would be a doubling again of the revenue of the company, which is almost entirely gross margin. So it would mean it would be like, okay, if you made $50 billion worth of cars, it would be like having $50 billion of incremental profit, basically, from that, because it's just software. So. And if that were the case, then yeah, if you do 20 PE on that, it's like $1 trillion, and the company's still in high growth mode. So I think there is a way to sort of like, justify the valuation of the company where it is using just the cars and nothing else, cars with FSD. And I suspect at least some number of investors are taking that approach. So in conclusion, while 2020 was a turning point for Tesla and in terms of profitability, we believe this is just the beginning. We think 2021 is going to be even more exciting and you don't know what to expect in a given year, obviously. Last year, there were many things we did not expect. But assuming that 21 is a relatively normal year from an external standpoint, I think it's going to be a great year for Tesla. We've got a ton of, many great new products coming out. We've got factories that are advanced factories that are going to start up production. It'll also make it easier having a factory in Berlin, one in Texas that can, just from a logistics standpoint, Texas can help supply the eastern half of the U.S., and Berlin can help supply Europe, and there's just fewer cars on boats, much less capital tied up, you know, with the cars that are, you know, on boats or going, being transported to customers, and I think the fundamental efficiency of the company will be much better with the factories, at least having factories on each continent and having two factories in the U.S. So I'm super excited about the future, yeah, really look forward to making it happen. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think our CFO, Zach Kirkhorn, has some opening remarks as well.
Yeah, thanks, Martin. As Elon mentioned, 2020 has been an extremely successful year while managing through many unforeseen and unexpected challenges. On cash, we continue to generate strong free cash flows, reaching a record $1.9 billion in Q4, alongside growth and investment for future programs. Additionally, we've been able to reduce our use of debt and various working capital lines, including settling $2 billion of convertible debt in Q4, which will continue into Q1. For net income, we achieved our first calendar year and six sequential quarters of profitability. In addition, auto gross margin excluding credits improved from 2019 to 2020, despite reductions in ASP and inefficiencies from new product launches and transitions. On Q4 specifically, this was a noisy quarter, so let's unpack a few things. Stock-based comp increased, part of which is driven by the rise of the stock price over the course of our 2020 employee performance grant process, and a portion of which is unique to Q4 only. The impact of SBC increases is seen across both COGS as well as operating expenses. Automotive gross margin in Q4 was primarily impacted by two things. First, we invested in improving our products built in Fremont, including converting over to the new Model S and Model X, launching the single-piece castings on Model Y, and introducing heat pump on Model 3. Second, logistics and labor costs were impacted due to supply chain instability and pandemic inefficiencies. Adjusting for items such as these, as we do in our internal management views, we saw an improvement in auto gross margin. Our services and other P&L was impacted by many of the same factors just mentioned, including onboarding costs associated with new service capacity. However, what's most important here is that we've accelerated the growth in service capacity and will continue to drive capacity expansion as fast as possible. On energy gross margin, we saw an impact from solar roof-related ramp costs and typical seasonality in the lease PPA business. OPEX, as a percentage of revenue, continues to reduce despite impacts from items mentioned, as well as increased investment in development of future products. Finally, the early settlement of our convertible notes resulted in an additional $100 million of interest expense for the quarter. All that being said, nothing has changed about our view that operating margin will continue to grow and remain industry leading. As we look forward, 2021 may be our most meaningful step forward yet, as we see the benefits of longstanding investments in capacity and technology. The range of possible outcomes this year is wide, given the magnitude of launches. That's a few things we should keep in mind. We continue to expect a long-term volume CAGR of 50%, of which we may materially exceed this in 2021. As we increase production rates, volumes will skew towards the second half of the year, and ramp inefficiencies will be a part of this year's story and are necessary to achieve our long-term goals. Specifically for Q1, our volumes will have the benefit of early Model Y ramp in Shanghai. However, S and X production will be low due to the transition to the newly re-architected products. Additionally, we're working extremely hard to manage through the global semiconductor shortage as well as port capacity, which may have a temporary impact. We will continue to invest heavily in supercharging and service capacity while driving reductions on cost, including OPEX as a percentage of revenue. Global demand continues to outpace production, and we're moving as quickly as we can with a focus on the long term. I look forward to providing updates on progress throughout the year.
Thank you very much. And now we can jump straight into questions from Say Technologies. The first question from institutional investors is, what is currently holding Tesla back from being the market share leader in solar?
Yeah, so we're actually seeing tremendous growth in solar quarter over quarter last year. And we had our best quarter since, I think, 2018 in Q4. So we do actually expect to become the market leader in solar and then go far beyond that. It's you know, unfortunately, there were a few years there where we had to devote the whole company to Model 3 production, and building. We have to basically take the whole company, including a bunch of people that were on solar, and have them work on cars. But now, now that we've got a little more bandwidth, we're putting a lot of attention on solar, and it is growing rapidly. So I think it will not be long before Tesla is by far the market leader in solar.
Another really important part of the solar strategy is achieving an industry-leading cost structure, which then allows us to have industry-leading pricing. And so that's something that that we've accomplished over the last year in terms of getting the cost structure in the place that it needs to be. And you know, as Elon mentioned, this is a really important part with industry-leading pricing to become the leader in the space.
Yeah, and actually an important part is achieving better integration between the Tesla Powerwall and the Tesla retrofit solar and Tesla roof. And we're confident we'll have excellent integration with the with the Powerwall and Tesla solar, whether it's retrofit or the solar glass roof before the end of the year. So it's really, I think we've got a good strategy. As Zach mentioned, we're focused on reducing the amount of time and the complexity of the install, and we're making great progress in that regard. And I think we'll have something that's really dialed in this year.
Thank you. The second question is, could current owners get ability to transfer their FSD to their next vehicle? This would be a huge for loyalty and overall increased sales of vehicles while offering more FSD sales on used vehicles.
Unfortunately, we're not considering that at this time. We do actually offer an increase, a higher price than for a car with FSD than the one without FSD. And I do think that the market currently undervalues, or the consumer market and arguably the stock market does probably undervalue the just how good FSD is going to be. But we're not currently planning on offering, on allowing it to get transferred.
Thank you.
We will be offering subscription pretty soon in the next month or two. So that should address a lot of people's concerns for being able to get it.
Thank you very much. And the third question is, can you give us a progress update on dry coating of the battery electrode? At the battery day, Elon said, I would not say this is completely in the bag as the yields were low.
Andrew?
Yeah, sure. It's true. The in-house cell manufacturing system we revealed at Battery Day contained new processes and equipment. So we did expect some unknown unknowns and technical challenges to arise through the production ramp. The Kato team, however, has been able to solve each manufacturing problem presented to date and continues to improve yield and rate week over week and month over month as we move up the production S-curve. At the same time, the cell engineering team's refined designs and deepened understanding has reinforced our confidence in the drive process and 4680 design, meeting our performance and cost targets. And from a capacity perspective, we have 10 gigawatt hours worth of equipment landed at Kato. The production staff is nearly all hired. Our material supply chain is established, and the team is on track for full production ramp this year. Meanwhile, we've developed enough engineering confidence with our 4680 design and the production process and equipment to kick off manufacturing equipment and facility construction to support our 100 gigawatt hour 2022 goal.
Okay, thank you very much. The next question is, why are you confident Tesla will achieve level 5 autonomy in 2021, and why is Dojo not necessary to get there?
I guess I'm confident based on my understanding of the technical roadmap and the progress that we're making between each beta iteration. As I was saying, it's now not remarkable at all for the car to completely drive you from one location to another through a series of complex intersections. It's now about just improving the corner case reliability and getting it, you know, to 99.9999% reliable with respect to an accident. Basically, we need to get it to better than human by a factor of at least 100% or 200%. But this is happening rapidly because we've got so much training data with all the cars in the field. And the software is improving dramatically. We also write the software for labeling. And I must say, it is quite challenging. We're moving everything towards video labeling. So it's all video labeling, all video inference. And so there's still a few of the neural nets that need to be upgraded to video training and video inference. And really, as we transition each net to video, the performance has become exceptional. So this is like a hard thing. The video, the labeling software that we wrote for video labeling, making that better has a huge effect on the efficiency of labeling. And then, of course, the holy grail is auto labeling. So we're putting a lot of work into having the labeling tool be more efficient when used by a person, as well as enabling auto labeling where we can. Dojo is a sort of training supercomputer. We believe it'll be, we think it may be the best neural net training computer in the world by possibly an order of magnitude. So it is a whole thing in and of itself. And this is something we could offer potentially as a service. If others need neural net training, we're not trying to keep it to ourselves. I think Dojo could be a whole line of business in and of itself. And then, of course, for training vast amounts of video data and getting the reliability from, say, 100% to 200% better than average human to 2,000% better than average human, Dojo will be very helpful in that regard.
Thank you. The next question is, what is Tesla's current gigawatt-hour run rate of the 4680 cell production? How do you see this run rate evolving by mid-2021 or end of 2021?
I think we kind of talked about that, Drew. Essentially what we're saying is that the number to think about focus on is like we've got 100 gigawatt hour total that Tesla cells produced in 2022. It's not that important to look at the run up to there because these things tend to improve exponentially. But we are installing capacity for it, you know, in 2022 for 200 gigawatt hours a year, and we think probably we should be able to achieve 50% of targeted design capacity in 2022.
Yeah, agreed, Elon. And as you've said before, with the S curve of production, you can be off a little bit on the initial part of the S curve, and that makes a difference in absolute capacity by quite a bit 1 month to the next. So,
yeah,
I mean, we are progressing up that S curve as fast as we possibly can.
Yeah, and we don't see any showstoppers.
Yep.
Thank you very much. And one more question from retail investors. What is Tesla doing to improve service experience? Tesla had a reputation for outstanding customer service. Now it's impossible to even call a service center, and appointments are scheduled weeks out. Jerome?
Yes. Well, first, best service, no service. So we spent a lot of effort trying to improve the quality and the reliability of our cars. In the last 2 years, the frequency of service visits are reduced by one third. So people have to, customers have to come less frequently in service, which is really the goal, no service. And if service has to take place, we're trying to make it as painless as possible. One big effort there is to increase mobile service, which is now more than 40% of all visits in North America. We're trying to push that to 50% this year. In 50% of service visits last less than 2 hours. So we're trying to service the cars very quickly so people can get their vehicles back on the road. And in terms of service appointment, it continues to improve. We have about we have actually 140 service centers right now in North America. For 100 out of those 140, you can get appointments in less than 10 days. And we're going to make sure it's all service centers are have a short wait time. We're accelerating, as Zach mentioned earlier, the pace of opening. We, in North America, we opened 11 centers in December, and we have plans to open 46 in the first half of this year. So that's what we're doing to improve service. In terms of phones, our emphasis is on the app. Really, we want all communications to go through the app, the Tesla app, and we're trying to move away from the phone. The app is much better than the phone. It can spot directly alerts directly from the car and schedule a service appointment. And there is a written record of all communication between the customer and the service team. You can have pictures in there. You can take care of your payment without entering the credit card and doing all that stuff. You get updates on the service, and there's even more features that are going to come in the coming months on the app, and that I think everybody will be happy, including the ability to spot where your service technician is and how far it is to coming from your car and what's going on there. So we are investing everything on the app, I think just like most other companies as well, and that's the way of the future.
Thank you very much. And now let's go to institutional investor questions. The question number one, what are the key milestones we need to achieve in order to evolve current FSD to a commercial level four, level five ride-sharing solution?
Yeah, so it really goes back to what I was saying a moment ago, which is we need to transition all of the neural nets in the car to video. And in order to do that, the whole stack has to be, changed to video. So that means that, gathering video clips, then using, and this is actually surround video. So you've got 8 cameras operating simultaneously with the synchronized frame rates. So you've got basically 8 frames surround video, 8 cameras surround video. And then you've got to label basically everything in that video snippet, and then train against that, and then have those neural nets operate the car. And this is coming from the past where we would label the neural nets would be a single camera, single frame. No video. And not combining the cameras, and then we went from single frame, one frame at a time, one camera at a time, neural nets to surround camera neural nets, where it would look at all images from all 8 cameras, but only one frame at a time, and now to where we include the time dimension, and that's video. So. I really just see this as a question of getting the work done. We're getting it done, and you can see the results in the rapidly improving FSD betas that are released. And we're also going to be expanding the FSD beta itself to include more and more people. And from my standpoint, it looks like a very clear and obvious path towards a vehicle that will drive, 100% safer than a person. Yeah, I really do not see any obstacles here.
Thank you. Thank you. And the second question from institutionals is, does Tesla plan or expect to license any of its software applications, FSD, and Autobidder in particular, to third-party OEMs?
I think we're very open to licensing our software to third parties. And we've had some preliminary discussions about licensing Autopilot to other OEMs. So this is something we're more than happy to do. And, you know, but I think obviously we need to probably do a little bit more work to prove that Tesla Autopilot is capable of full self-driving, which, like I said, I think will become obvious later this year. And then we're more than happy to license that to other car companies. We're definitely not trying to keep it to be a Tesla exclusive situation. And I think probably the same goes for Autobidder. We haven't thought as much about Autobidder, but the Tesla philosophy is definitely not to create walled gardens. You know, we're going to allow other companies to use our supercharger networks, using our autonomy software and Autobidder and perhaps other things would be fine too.
Thank you. The next question is, key differences in product customer preferences, FSD strategy between China and the rest of the world. Do we need to do things differently to win the Chinese EV market?
Well, we currently are winning we are currently the leader in the Chinese EV market. So I think we must be doing something right if we're the best-selling electric car in China. That said, very few of our customers in China, I think maybe as low as 1 or 2%, actually have selected the FSD option. This is much lower than the rest of the world. We definitely need to make it work well in China. I think as soon as it works well in China, then we will have a high take rate for FSD. I find the customers in China, Tesla owners in China, are among the most discerning in the world. Their attention to detail is incredible. So I'm confident that they will buy FSD as soon as it is working well in China. And hopefully that is later this year.
Thank you. And the next question is it fair to argue that the best way to think about companies' long-term earnings power is tied to profit per unit of battery capacity? 3 terawatt hours target from battery day implies half of long-term battery capacity goes to storage, depending on what you assume for pack size on Elon's 20 million vehicle unit goal.
It is. So the fundamental limit on electric vehicles right now in general is availability of cells. What's the output of battery cells in gigawatt hours? And you can't grow faster than that. Now, at Tesla, we've improved the efficiency of our cars dramatically such that you can actually get pretty good range even with the standard range battery pack. It's approaching the sort of high 200s, and with some slight continued improvements, we'll start to get to 300 mile range even with standard pack and on order 500 kilometers. So there's efficiency improvements in the car, but fundamentally the growth is dependent on cell production. There's obviously a lot of other companies that have a need for cells. But the reason Tesla is doing its own cell production is in order to accelerate the growth. It is not to make less use of our cell suppliers. In fact, I want to be really clear, Tesla wants to increase purchases from cell suppliers. And we've been very clear with our cell suppliers, whether it be CATL or Panasonic or LG, that we will take as many batteries as they can produce. So, and we urge them to increase their production, and we will buy as much as they can send to us. Obviously, there's some price limits on that because the car still needs to be affordable. I'm just trying to be as clear as possible that our goal with making our own cells is not to disintermediate our suppliers. It is to supplement our suppliers. And we want our suppliers of cells to increase their production and, in addition, have our production that is simply taking up the amount beyond which they are either unable or unwilling to increase their production. is an acceleration over and above what the most that our suppliers say they can produce for us. And so probably the, you know, since the cell output drives vehicle output, probably the broad brushstroke value of Tesla is just what's the cell output that implies vehicle output, and then at least double that for autonomy revenue, probably more than double, and that's how you figure out the value of the company, I think, long term.
Thank you very much. The next question is about 4680 cells, which we already covered in the retail section of this call. So let's go straight to the last question from institutional investors, which is, where are you in Cybertruck development? What are your expectations for Cybertruck deliveries in 2021?
All right, so we finished almost all of the Cybertruck engineering. So we're no longer iterating at the design center level or design level. We've got the designs fixed. We're getting to, we'll soon order the equipment necessary to make the Cybertruck work. We're actually going to be using even bigger casting machines for the rear body of the Cybertruck because you've got, obviously, it's a bigger vehicle and you've got a long truck bed that's going to support a lot of load. So we'll be using an 8,000-ton casting press for the rear body casting as opposed to a 6,000-ton for Model Y. So 6,000-ton was the biggest casting press in the world. 8,000-ton, obviously, quite a bit bigger than that. And I think it's going to be an incredible vehicle. If we get lucky, we'll be able to do a few deliveries towards the end of this year, but I expect volume production to be in 2022.
Thank you very much. And now we can start with questions in the queue.
Thank you. Our first question will come from Colin Rush with Oppenheimer. Please go ahead.
Thanks so much, guys. Can you talk a little bit about the regulatory environment for FSD and how you're seeing that play out? Obviously, it's a bit of a moving target right now, and you guys are leading the way here, but we'd love to understand how those conversations are going and how you see that impacting the rollout of FSD throughout the balance of this year and into next year.
Okay. To Zach, do you want to start that, or Zach and Jerome?
You know, the what we're seeing right now in the U.S., for example, is a pretty dynamic space, but it's overall not particularly limiting on a rule basis. But what we're going to expect is to have to work with regulators to demonstrate really, really high reliability, as Elon said before. The rest of the world's fairly dynamic. In Europe, we see a general slowdown, generally not reaching past level three right now, with some impetus to start working on new working groups to reach past that. And China's showed an interest in working on level four or even level five later this year. So we expect a pretty dynamic 2021 in the regulatory space, with leadership in the U.S. looking for manufacturers to demonstrate really good launches and really high reliability before releasing to wider and wider groups.
Thanks, guys. And then just a quick follow-up around inflation on some of the materials markets. Obviously, there's a lot going on as low interest rates flow through the basic materials space. Can you talk a little bit about the supply chain and how you're mitigating some of your exposure around some of your raw material costs?
And this is Jerome. Yeah, for supply chain, the first priority now is to deal with the disruptions from COVID and shipping, in particular boats between Asia and North America. But we're also looking forward to pricing, and we're watching this very closely for all the components. We are entering a series of long-term agreements with preferred suppliers, to ensure that not only we're going to have enough quantity to support the growth, 50% CAGR, as Zach mentioned earlier, but also good pricing with appropriate sharing of the risks.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Dan Levy with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thank you. Two questions, one on 21 and just one on capital. First on 21, any expectations for what we should see on regulatory credit sales? And then the second question is on capital. Obviously, you raised a lot of capital in 2020. You know, what should we think about for use of those funds beyond just covering some of the maturities? And can you just give us a sense of what the elevated liquidity does and doesn't buy? Meaning, to what extent does elevated capital enable you to accelerate plans on building capacity or expanding vertical integration, accelerating timing on full self-drive features? So those are the questions. Thank you.
Sure. On the regulatory credit sales side, this isn't always just a forecast. 2020 regulatory credit sales ended up being higher than our expectations. And it's difficult to give guidance on that. I mean, what I've said before is that in the long term, regulatory credit sales will not be a material part of the business, and we don't plan the business around that. It's possible that for a handful of additional quarters, it remains strong. It's also possible that it's not. You know, most of our regulatory credit revenue from Q4 was not lined up prior to the beginning of the quarter. And these were discrete deals that were struck over the course of the quarter. So I wish I could give you more on this, Dan, but it's a space that's extraordinarily difficult for us to forecast. On the second side, with respect to capital, a couple of things that we're thinking through there. So as I mentioned in my opening remarks, debt reduction is an important thing that we're focused on now. Early conversions, you know, these are things we don't have a choice on. We did around $2 billion of that in Q4. We currently have $1.4 billion that we expect to go out in Q1 as a result of early conversions or conversions on convertible debt. That number may increase. And so debt reduction is important. That's helpful on interest expense as well. We are also using the money with respect to our investments in future capacity. And so what we're able to do now that we haven't had the opportunity to do in the past is as we're building capacity, particularly in Austin and Berlin, we can build that capacity with the expectation of what the end state of capacity will be, pulling forward some of those investments, rather than incrementally adding capacity as we go along. And so this is an important part in terms of capital efficiency that we haven't had the luxury to do in the past, and it's great to be able to have the liquidity to focus on that. And then more broadly, as Jerome was touching on, service expansion is really important to the future strategy of the company. So as you saw in our Q4 numbers, the expansion of service centers and mobile service from Q3 to Q4 increased quite a bit and was also quite a bit higher than the first part of the year. And so we're able now to make investments there and also in the supercharging network to get ahead of future demand, which will cost us more in the near term, but is what the right long-term thing is for our customers and the company.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Alex Potter with Piper Sandler. Please go ahead.
Great, thanks. Was wondering, you mentioned how you'd like to increase your purchases of cells from suppliers. Does this require them to also have the capability to build structural 4680 cells of the sort that you're putting in this, you know, these newer iterations of vehicles?
No, it does not. Although we are talking with them about making the 4680 form factor, but it is not required. For example, the new S currently uses the 18650 form factor, but just a more advanced cell, and we think we'll continue to use that form factor for at least a few years. But we will, over time, be retiring the form factors and trying to move to a consistent form factor. So, but it is not a requirement that we place upon our suppliers because it would just result in fewer cells. So it's better for us to deal with the complexity of different cell form factors than insist on a single form factor for our suppliers today. But like I said, over time, it will make sense to have a consistent form factor.
Okay, makes sense. And then one additional, maybe qualitative question on capacity expansion. You've mentioned in the past, I mean, access to dollars is one thing, but access to human beings that are sufficiently qualified is another. Have you run up against any issues on that front that would potentially limit your growth in any way? Thanks.
That is one of the things that limits growth is, or limits the growth rate. It doesn't limit the ultimate size, but limits the growth rate, which is what's the rate at which we can onboard great people and get them trained in the right areas. You certainly can't, like, instantaneously, if you've got a factory that has 20,000 employees, you can't just hire 20,000 people instantly. They're usually doing something else. So they've got to transition from whatever they were doing or move from some other part of the country. And so there's a certain amount of time required for that. That said, we do think that we can maintain a growth rate in excess of 50% per year for many years to come. At least 50% a year for many years to come. I think this year we may track to a fair bit above 50%, but we don't want to commit to that, but at least that's what it would appear. And the same again next year. It appears to be meaningfully above 50%.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Joseph Speck with RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Elon, back in 2018, you tweeted about electric vans and how it could be interesting to work with Daimler and Sprinter. We haven't really heard of anything since, but in the meantime, we've seen a lot of activity in that electric van and last mile space from a number of established players and startups. So I know you said that you have a lot of projects on the table, but can you provide us an updated of your thoughts on this market, and is it something you're interested in?
I think Tesla is definitely going to make an electric van at some point. So the thing to bear in mind is that there is fundamentally a constraint on battery cell output. If one is not involved in manufacturing, it's really hard to appreciate just how hard it is to scale production. It's the hardest thing in the world. Prototypes are easy. Scaling production is very hard. Big part of the reason, the main reason we have not accelerated new products is, like, for example, the Tesla Semi, is that we simply don't have enough sales for it. Like, if we were to make the Semi, like, right now, which we could easily go into production with the Semi, but we would not have enough sales for it right now. We will have enough sales for the Semi when we are producing the Tesla 4680 in volume. But for example, Semi would use typically five times the number of cells that a car would use, but it would not sell for five times what a car would sell for. So it would not make sense for us to do the Semi right now, but it will absolutely make sense for us to do it as soon as we can address the cell production constraint. The same would go for a van.
Okay, thank you. And then maybe if I could dig into your past on one more item. About 2 years ago at the Autonomy Day, you stated that you're working on the next-gen Tesla chip, which was about 2 years away. So is there any update on that front?
To be clear, we're still not the software still does not fully use the capabilities of the FSD version 1 computer. It is really just an incredibly powerful computer, and I'm personally certain that you can achieve full self-driving with a safe level far in excess of a person just using the full self-driving version 1 computer. The version 2 we expect to be about three times as powerful, and this would need to be paired with higher resolution cameras, it requires a bunch of things to change simultaneously. But we have not been rushing the version 2 of the chip. It's coming along well, and it's in good shape. But since we can achieve FSD full self-driving with the current system, it would actually be a distraction right now if we were to introduce the full self-driving the Tesla FSD chip too, because it would set us back quite a bit on software, and software is the critical path to full self-driving. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. That's an improvement, but not a game changer. The FSD too. Getting the software to work and getting all the neural nets to be video, that's the game changer.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Emmanuel Rosner with Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. My first question is about your in-house cell manufacturing efforts. So in addition to building up capacity, some of the goals you highlighted was to cut the pricing or the cost by about 50%, boost the range by about 50% over a number of years. So wanted to know if your initial efforts are, you know, trending in that direction. What is sort of like the timeline to achieve these goals? And maybe related to this, how are you thinking about the timeline for the cheaper Tesla, the entry model, potentially?
I think we feel very confident about achieving those targets, let's say, over a three-year time frame. I don't know, Drew, it's not like year one. So maybe 4 years, give ourselves a little room. But for 3 or 4 years, I'd say,
We put together the trajectory, you know, in the battery day, and we're on that trajectory still. I think that's probably the best reference for the cost trajectory that we are on.
Yeah, we're aspiring to do better than what was presented at battery day, but we're confident of at least doing what we presented at battery day.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Ben Kallal with Baird. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thank you, Elon. Congrats to the whole team. We're trying to put together all the breadcrumbs. If I remember correctly, going back, you know, 10 years, you talked about when you had a mass market car on the road that you'd step down as CEO and be a chief architect. And then we have, you know, you go into Hawaii to see Larry, and the X.com, and I'm trying to put it all together. So there's a lot of questions there. Thank you.
Sure. I expect to be CEO of Tesla for several years. I think there's still a lot that I'm super excited about doing, and I think it would be hard to leave a lot of these great projects halfway or partway done. So I do expect to be running the company for several years into the future. Now, obviously, nobody is or should be CEO forever. I don't expect to be. The sheer amount of work required to be CEO of Tesla is insane. I definitely do more technical work than is typical for a CEO. So, it would be nice to have a bit more free time on my hands, as opposed to just working day and night from when I wake up to go to when I go to sleep 7 days a week. It's pretty intense. But I think the mission isn't over yet, and we've still got a long way to go before we can really make a dent in the world on accelerating the advent of sustainable energy. The goal of Tesla from the beginning has been to accelerate sustainable energy. But if you say, like, what percentage of cars on the road are electric today, it's still very, very tiny, like on an order of 1%, or I think less than 1% of the total fleet worldwide. So that's still a hell of a long way to go for, you know, call it on the order of 1% of the fleet is electric. There's also a tremendous way to go on solar power, although it's exciting to see the advent of very cost competitive wind and solar and geothermal. And of course we need a large volume of stationary battery packs. But basically the three legs of a sustainable energy future are sustainable energy generation via solar, wind, geothermal, and hydro, and a few others. And I'm actually not against nuclear fission. I actually think nuclear fission is, you know, with a well-designed reactor in a situation that is not subject to bad weather or seriously bad weather, is actually a good thing to do. So, but then the second thing you need stationary storage. You need batteries because most renewable energy is intermittent. The wind doesn't blow all the time. The sun doesn't shine all the time. So you need a lot of batteries, and they need to be very long-lasting and high cycle life. And then you need electric transport. And if you have those three things, we've got a very bright future with respect to energy and the environment. So it's a long way to go on that, and so I'm still very much fired up to work on that.
Fantastic. And let's take the last question, please.
Thank you. Our last question will come from Gene Munster with Loop Ventures. Please go ahead.
I was happy to see the update on the timing of Semi, and had a couple related questions. And first, since Semi trucks typically travel predictable highway miles, will Tesla Semi be the first to achieve full autonomy?
I think that's quite likely, yes.
Fantastic.
Yes, I can't imagine. I'm not sure who would be number two, but yeah, it seems highly likely, yeah.
Okay.
And then my hardware, it's the exact same part numbers on the Semi than it is on the Tesla cars. There's no difference.
Yeah, it's true. As it is, we need to modify the parameters, software parameters change for autopilot or full self-driving, because it needs to know if it's in a Model 3, Model Y, Model X, or Model S. And so we just inform the full self-driving brain that it is now in a semi-truck.
Would it need to be retrained then as part of that?
No. I think there will be you'll have a different control functions, because there are turns that you could do in a regular car that you cannot do in a semi. Like you don't want to try to parallel park this thing in, on the street in city. it needs to know its limitations. Being a giant truck.
Makes sense. My follow up question was related to, if you could just help explain why battery electric will win versus hydrogen cell fuel tech.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I've had this question a million times for regular vehicles, even back in the early Roadster days, even before we had the Roadster out. People were saying, that somehow hydrogen is going to be a better means of energy storage in a car than batteries. And it's like, this is just really not the case. Hydrogen is it's number one on the periodic table. It's got very low density. It's got low density as a liquid. It's like styrofoam level density as liquid. And then it's only a liquid very close to absolute zero. So you have to have it's really not realistic to keep it as liquid. You want to have it as a high pressure gas that has even lower density. So you need a gigantic fuel tank volumetrically, and it's got to be very high pressure. It's a big pain in the ass, basically. If somebody was going to, say, use an alternate chemical energy storage mechanism to hydrogen, I'd say they should use propane or something like that, or methane, or those would be way better than hydrogen. And then having it be a fuel cell just adds even further complications to the situation. It's just crazy, basically. We're extremely confident that we could do long-range trucking with batteries. The amount that works out, if you could just like take, say, what hours per kilogram of currently available cells and say, okay, what weight would you need to go, let's say, 500 miles? And to what degree does that affect your payload? And it's like, okay, you can do this. If you do it right, you basically have no effect on your payload or almost nothing. And you can have a long range truck. I mean, Jerome, do you want to add to that?
No, I agree with everything. And we see also an increase on the regionalization of trucks. And I think it will be perfect
the Tesla Semi will be perfect for it. Yeah, and yeah, I'm looking forward to having some additional ones on the road very soon.
But basically, we do not see any issues with creating a compelling long-range truck with batteries. Apart from cell supply, cell supply is the only thing. Cell supply is it. Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have today. So thanks for all of your great questions. And we will speak to you again in about 3 months. Thanks.
All right, thanks a lot.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.
All right, guys, don't disconnect on me. I just want to do a quick recap here. First of all, thanks for, you know, listening to the call with me. I think that was a lot of fun. I'm just going to make sure that the audio is working. You guys know how I am about that. Let me switch over here, get a little bit bigger. So I'm just going to wait a second here, catch up with the chat, make sure everything is working, and then I'll go through some of my takeaways here. So I've got a lot of notes. We'll see. We'll see how that goes. All right, looks like it's working. Audio is good. Audio is Gucci. Love it. All right, so I'm just going to kind of flip through some of the big things that I saw here. So I kind of highlighted them as we were going through. But in the opening comments, probably the big takeaway for me was that Zach said that adjusting for one-time items, gross margin actually improved quarter over quarter. So let me flip over to Excel here and just, I'm not going to flip over on the live stream, but just to look at my spreadsheet here. We had automotive gross margins this quarter of 24%. Versus last quarter, 27.7%. That includes regulatory credits. So it was about 350 basis points lower with regulatory credits. Excluding regulatory credits, it was a 20.7% this quarter versus 23.7% last quarter. So really interestingly there, Zach said that without these one-time items, which I wish he would have given a little bit more detail on, that they would have added improvements quarter over quarter. So there was dramatic cost hits specific to Q4, causing them to, you know, really, really have that significant decline in margin. So that's huge. As you guys, if you watched my video that I put out just after the shareholder letter, that was the big thing that I was disappointed in. That was the biggest thing that was off on my forecast. And as I said, that's the first thing I go to when I look at these reports, because I think that's the best indicator of Tesla's progress and how that's going to impact the coming quarters. Because I don't really care about the past, you know, Tesla's a growth story. We're looking at the future. We're looking at how they generate their operating leverage as they grow. So to see that fall when Tesla delivered 40,000 more vehicles, 30% more vehicles quarter over quarter than they did, you know, in Q3 was really, really disappointing. So to hear that that is at least partially impacted, if not entirely impacted by one-time things is great, great news. They also said that they settled $2 billion of convertible debt in Q4 and that interest pay. So I noted that interest payments will decline going forward, but because of that early conversion, it sounds like they for some reason had an increased interest expense in the quarter, which that would have impacted their GAAP earnings. And I believe, yeah, also their non-GAAP earnings as well. So that was kind of interesting to hear them say that's another factor that would have pulled things down. That would just be a one-time item. Let's see. So they talked a lot about their guidance. You know, they said in the shareholder letter capacity above 1 million vehicles already. Although I think that's, you know, that's really just production equipment. That doesn't mean production rate. It just means they've got the equipment there, you know, and it's ready to be ramped up. They still have to do the ramping. But they said, you know, greater than 50%, reiterated that on the call. Musk even said that that should be next year as well. So just trying to do the math here. It doesn't get us a whole lot. Let's say it's 800,000 this year. I think it'll be higher than that, but just for ease of numbers, that would mean he expects greater than 1.2 million in 2022, which, you know, no surprise, they're targeting 100 gigawatt hours of battery production in 2022. And really, so that's probably leads us into the next interesting point on battery production. Musk said that they're actually targeting 200 gigawatt hours in terms of the production capacity that they're building out, and that they're thinking they can get to about 50% utilization of that throughout the course of 2022. So that was one of the big questions we had coming out of Battery Day, at least one of the questions I had is, okay, is that 100 gigawatt hour number a production capacity? Is that, you know, run rate end of year? Is that total production for the year, which would be obviously best case? And from that, it kind of sounds like that's what he's saying there, is that, you know, they're putting the expenses right now and in place, the investment in place to build that capacity. Zach mentioned that, you know, that's one of the reasons for the capital raise, is to be able to build out that full capacity ahead of time. And then it sounds like they're really shooting to actually produce about 100 gigawatt hours in 2022 internally. So, you know, that's we could be looking at a heck of a lot higher than 50% if that does happen. So super interesting there. FSD transferability, they noted that they are not considering that at this time. So kind of interesting. I don't know why they would consider it. That would disincentivize people. It would incentivize people to purchase new vehicles because it's easier to buy a new car if you don't have to pay for that full self-driving option again. But that's not what Tesla's trying to do. They're not trying to sell more vehicles. They're more production constrained than they are demand constrained. There are many other demand levers they could pull other than just changing their full self-driving thing to be, you know, individual rather than with the vehicle. And as far as an expectation, you know, most options stay with the car. You don't really get to keep them. So I think it makes sense. As an investor, I think that's the right move for Tesla to do. And I'm, you know, as much as it would be great for individuals to have, you know, this full self-driving license that runs in perpetuity, it just doesn't really make sense for Tesla from a business perspective, especially because later on Musk said that he believes that the consumer market and also probably the stock market is undervaluing full self-driving. So, you know, this is as bullish as Elon has ever been. He's been super bullish in the past, but this is, you know, as confident as I've ever seen him in their autonomy progress in the full self-driving beta. It sounds like that continues to go really well. Sounds like they're on the verge of kind of expanding that. So it's good to see. As we see that expansion, I would expect that to be around the time that they start to switch things over to being a little bit more subscription-based. Because again, I don't think they want to give people the ability to own it forever like they do right now, at least with that vehicle. So a subscription even kind of takes that a step further. All right, just kind of flipping through the notes here. So let's see. So the question on solar, really happy with the progress in solar this quarter. You know, they came in ahead of my expectations there. Certainly on energy storage, they came in well ahead of my expectations. It sounds like Musk is really confident that they are going to soon become the market share leader. We didn't really get any hard answers on that. There wasn't anything of like, oh, we're production constrained, or we're installation constrained, or whatever else. But they did say that, you know, they feel like they've got the cost structure in a good spot now. They feel like they're ready to take that next step. And we have seen that over the last two quarters. So hopefully that is true. And hopefully that'll continue in 2021, which would be great. Let's see. Service, a lot of stuff that we've talked about, you know, it was nice to get a little bit of stats on that. So they said 100 of 140 service centers servicing those areas. You can get an appointment in fewer than 10 days at 100 of 140 of those. And they're targeting to bring that down to 100%. Zach said that with the capital raises, they are using some of that capital to increase the expansion of things like service, like supercharging. So great to see that. A lot of stuff on Autopilot we've heard. The interesting thing there was their willingness to license. So it sounds like they've actually already had some early stage conversations about licensing for Autopilot. It sounds like they're willing to do Autobidder, but probably are not quite at that spot yet where they're trying to license that out. Just something that could be on the horizon someday. So I think they've probably had conversations about the supercharger network. I think they've probably had conversations about the Autopilot. But Musk said that really they need to just prove that reliability, because until they do that, it's going to, just like selling to a customer, Musk views selling the full self-driving option right now as being undervalued for Tesla when they're selling it to a customer. They're not going to then go ahead and go out and do that to a different company. That would be bad even just for a return on what you're selling, but also then you're helping out your competitors, which, you know, Musk says that he doesn't mind doing that, but there's a limit to that. You know, you're not just going to give them the keys to the castle that you've been building for two decades. So he's open to it, but it's not going to be something that Tesla just gives it away for free. And that opens up a lot of possibilities, you know. Musk talked about the leverage of the vehicle fleet from a revenue and margin perspective. And then if we think about that from a licensing of autopilot perspective, you start to leverage not only your own fleet, but everybody else's fleet too. So, and that's extremely high margin, zero cost revenue. So it's from the stuff that Tesla's already developed. So we're witnessing this transformation. A lot of people don't really understand it yet, but we're witnessing this transformation of Tesla from manufacturer, which Elon Musk says that's going to be their long-term advantage, but from manufacturer to technology company, and the technology as a percentage of profits is just going to continue to increase and increase as Tesla demonstrates more capability. So it's a really exciting time for that. You know, if we rewind a year, I was probably mostly focused on Tesla generating operating leverage, as that was the thing that, you know, Wall Street's not really thinking about or not really understanding yet. I think if I can change that this year, I think Wall Street kind of gets that now, but probably doesn't really have a full understanding of how dramatically game-changing Tesla's revenue from software is going to be and the margins and profit from software are going to be. Cybertruck, kind of stuff we've heard before. You know, they're targeting getting deliveries. I wouldn't expect any high volume this year. Maybe they're sandbagging, but probably not. He said he's going to have another call on the Model S, so that's exciting. We should get a little bit more detail. They shared a little bit in the earnings letter, but not a lot. There was one other thing. I'm pretty sure I bolded it, and I put like a bunch of arrows. Oh, yeah. So they talked about... They talked about Dojo, and this is something I speculated on a few times back in episodes where we've talked about Dojo, is Tesla could potentially leverage that for other companies, and then you get into sort of the situation where, you know, we've seen this play out with Amazon, where suddenly they've got this completely separate business model that's extremely profitable, and I think Tesla's developing quite a few of different business lines like that, whether it's, you know, autopilot as a license, auto bidder as a license, and then AI, and leveraging their AI assets for other companies that maybe don't have the ability to build what Elon Musk calls the best supercomputer for neural nets by an order of magnitude. So a lot to be excited about there, that, you know, that's a couple years down the road, but it's going to be pretty impactful, I think. Okay, so just some general thoughts here to wrap up the day. I'm just looking at the clock. It's been a long one. Looks like Tesla stock is down about 5.5% right now. So it dropped a couple percent during the call, which I found surprising. Again, Elon Musk actually, this is one of the first times I've heard him, at least in a long time, talk about Tesla's valuation from an undervalued perspective without a lot of hedging. You know, we've seen him in the past come out and talk about like short burn of the century and stuff like that, but he's also been very cautious on the stock price, saying like, yeah, it's volatile, or, you know, Tesla stock price is too high right now, even though he's always said in the long term it should be higher. So it's interesting to see him make those comments. And I think there's, you know, that should probably not go unnoticed. He sort of did the math, super quick, high level math on how a $1 trillion valuation makes sense. And he said, you know, I think some investors are doing that math, and that's why the valuation is where it's at. And I would agree, some investors are, but definitely not the entire investment community. So once that starts to happen more and more, you know, I think the stock price has a lot of room to go up as that's realized. And that just comes back to, you know, how much progress happens and how quickly that progress happens, how likely it looks that Tesla can actually do full autonomy, and how we see that develop this year. So that, I think, was pretty important on the call. Again, reiterate the thing on margin that Zach said. I'll have to go back and listen to those comments again. But if Tesla actually, you know, if there were actually one-time hits causing Tesla to have, you know, a 400 basis point decline in margin, and if that goes away in Q1, we're going to actually start to see the leverage that Tesla can generate at these kind of delivery levels, which is really what I was looking for in Q4. It didn't happen for those reasons. But again, that's why we go through all these numbers, because we need to understand this context. And hopefully that was helpful with the numbers that came out today. So I guess kind of closing thought would be, I was definitely disappointed when the earnings came out. It's always mixed. Yeah, there's always good things. There's always bad things. Overall, I was disappointed because of the poor automotive gross margin, the poor operating margin afterwards on that, you know, falling from 9.2% in Q3 down to 5.4% this quarter. Super disappointing to see that. Missing their earnings per share numbers, again, I don't really care too much about that, but, you know, a lot of us expected a beat. To not see that is a little bit disappointing. That's mixed with excitement about the Model S refresh, although, you know, I think the interior looks awesome. I would have loved to have seen a little bit more differences on the exterior, and from a customer perspective, from an investor perspective, it's not a big deal. It's probably optimizing for, you know, lower costs, which is great. But I would have loved to have seen something that made it a little bit more clear. Hey, this is the new Model S. That'll incentivize more people to try and upgrade. But I do think Tesla's pushing Model S and X a little bit more now, hopefully, because they did increase their capacity, current production capacity at Fremont, from 90,000 up to 100,000. Maybe they're just rounding that out now to increments of 50,000. That could be the case, but they did increase that. So hopefully we see Model S and X return to some strength. So overall, again, with the earnings, a little bit disappointed, but I think they clarified a lot of the things on the call that I was disappointed in when the letter came out. So that's great. And overall, I left the call feeling quite a bit better, even though the stock has, for some reason, fallen a little bit more. I said in the chat before we started, for those of you that were here, I was a little bit surprised that it didn't fall further. So where we go from here, who knows? You know, the market digests. I think Zach said things on the call that explain the earnings results really well. So once the market starts to understand that, I think we kind of, you know, who knows what happens with the overall market. That's probably going to be the dictator of where Tesla goes. But certainly it's not anything that I'm feeling bad about, not anything where I'm like, oh, shoot, like my thesis is off, I need to sell stock or anything like that. Would have liked to have seen better leverage. But again, hopefully that's just one-time items. So with that, I think we'll wrap it up. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Really appreciated, you know, getting to spend this time with you. Hopefully you like the new format. Let me know. I'm always looking to make that stuff better. And again, if you like what I'm doing here, shameless plug again for Patreon. You guys really make stuff like this possible, and hopefully a lot of exciting stuff possible in the future. So if you want to support, you can do that at patreon.com at patreon.com/Tesla Daily Podcast. Otherwise, you know, subscribe, like, comment, the usual. But we'll wrap it up there, and I will talk to you guys tomorrow. Thank you.